Happy Friday, everyone. I know it's freezing out there for you desert rats, so cozy up with our hot takes today. I'm here with co-host David Figler and contributor Andrew Corrali, creator of TheList.Vegas. And today on CityCast Las Vegas, we're talking about why local businesses are still mad about F1, the giant Dorito on the Luxor, and what we should build on the old Fiesta Henderson site. It's Friday, January 12th. I'm Sarah Lohman, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hey.
All right. So we've got some things to cover today, including the fact that it snowed. I got snow in Henderson. What about y'all downtown?
No, it's just cold and miserable.
Just cold and windy.
Miserable.
The dog took one look and said, nope.
Yes.
Came right back in.
Yes. My cat and I do go on walks every morning, and it was a very short one today. All right. Well, let's talk about some citywide issues today. So it seems that F1 wasn't all that it promised, and some local businesses are still pretty mad at it. Andrew, do you have the deets on that?
I do. Yeah. Now that the microplastic tire dust has settled from the November F1 race, it seems there's a bit of sort of outrage flavored soul searching going on as Las Vegans consider the real costs of hosting the race. So sure, the race supposedly brought in $1.2 billion or whatever, you know, for the local economy. But to mangle a quote from William Gibson, the money may be here, but it's not exactly evenly distributed. So I call this vroom bust. So most recently on Tuesday, a local business advocate, Lisa Mayo DeRiso, she urged the LVCVA to remove the temporary bridge on Flamingo that's still impacting small businesses. And she also asked them to create a $23 million recovery fund to pay back a clutch of businesses that lost out during F1 weekend due to road closures,
wow,
traffic diversions, and blocked entrances. And so,
not just the weekend, like all the lead up to it as well.
Oh yeah, great clarification. Yeah. I mean, it was a sort of an echoing impact. And I think Lisa DeMaio Riso's ask is kind of like the pinnacle of this, you know, this chorus of complaints from other local businesses, some pretty high profile ones. Gino Ferraro of Ferraro's Italian Restaurant said he lost like $2 million due to F1.
Whoa.
The producer of Absinthe, wrote an open letter, you know, complaining about the impact. So bigger businesses and smaller businesses, from gas stations to convenience stores, that say that F1 put their businesses into neutral during the race weekend phenomenon. And when Gino Ferraro complains of Ferraro Restaurant, you know something's up, because, he's a hardcore businessman, just, you know, does his thing, has built his restaurant into, kind of a cool institution down there. F1 was not the, you know, the grand success that was, you know, trumpeted by the countless headlines in the wake of the race.
Okay, I mean, it seems pretty clear that it's the big four casino companies that were the real winners here, right? So why aren't they paying up? Or, you know, who owes whom what in the wake of F1? And, is that calculation even possible to make? Like, how do the restaurant owners know that they've lost so much money?
Well, interesting side note, I know that the county right now, who is still on the receiving end of even more of an ask from F1, they still need like $40 million or something like that, is doing its own assessment, like hardcore audit of how much it cost the county to allow F1 to happen during ramp up period and the weekend itself. And I think the idea there is that the county's going to say, you want $40 million, you cost us $60 million. So let's just call it even. You know, whatever it is. I mean, I just made up those numbers, as most of the analysts who are talking about economic impact do. Look, it's capitalism. There's going to be winners and losers. It's interesting that people are, you know, saying, well, we want our share too. What about us? What about us?
Yep.
But I think that a lot of people would have that position, not just this small group of business people represented by the ever intriguing Lisa DeMaio Riso, who's the real winner here because the RJ has now called her a Southern Nevada Business Development Executive. Just Google her. She's a hoot. The causes that she jumps in for are just wild, and she is very voracious in that.
Eclectic, shall we say.
Eclectic, yeah, yeah. But at any rate, you know, I would imagine every commuter would be like, I'll jump in on a class action suit. I was delayed. I lost my job because of F1. You know what I mean? It's like
there was a lot
of impact that isn't going to be discussed. It's nice that these specific owners have kind of bonded together, but I think a lot of people in the city could do the same.
Andrew, what do you think? You know, is this calculation even possible to make?
Actually, I kind of think it is. I mean, it's not as complicated a moral calculus as maybe people think. And I think what we're seeing here is corporate socialism. We got like a front row seat to corporate socialism in real time. And that's when you have big companies that privatize the profits, but socialize the costs of doing their business. And so between the F1 asking the county for, you know, to kick in $40 million to help pay for the race repaving, and then you know, Lisa Maio de Riso asking the LVCVA to kick in money for economic recovery to fund small businesses. That's how kind of like, you know, mega corporate modern capitalism works.
But the
crazy idea is the most reasonable one. Why can't F1 pay into that recovery fund? Or why can't the Big Four pay into that recovery fund? Why can't F1 foot the entire repaving bill as, you know, the cost of, you know, putting on this, you know, this huge spectacle? And I feel like, you know, there's this, you know, like cities and municipalities are frightened of these, you know, gigantic companies that basically, you know, want to put on these huge spectacles. And it's this race to the bottom where, you know, cities are afraid to ask for anything because they're afraid that they'll, you know, that this, you know, this company will just move on to the next town. And, you know, it's kind of a race to the bottom.
Yeah, thankful for them, right?
Right. Bakersfield's like, object more. We want it. Bakersfield.
Exactly. And it's like, why can't there be some sort of like common good cover charge for these huge spectacles that, you know, come in and chew up our infrastructure and create massive headaches for, you know, for working people to pay, you know, in an anticipatory way, you know, to cover these impacts that we all feel. And so I'm glad that we're having this kind of, you know, reflective moment, because it shows that despite the headlines, like success, you know, tied to a number is not success for all. And it's not exactly democratically distributed, I guess you would say.
Speaking of out of control capitalism and large sporting events, I don't know if you know this, but the Super Bowl is right around the corner.
What?
So we're hosting it this year. Can you imagine?
What?
So do we think that's going to have the same sort of impact on local businesses that F1 did?
Do we even have a place where they could do the Super Bowl?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thought experiment. And on the face of it, I mean, it you know, I don't know that the Super Bowl is going to require some massive infrastructural, you know, makeover of the area. Right. We have the stadium.
Right.
You know, we
have
the roads.
That's
already
done.
We have
the
parking. Right. And so it's going to be huge. I think that's going to be, you know, great for the city. But the thing that's different about Super Bowl and that it has in common with our other big events like, you know, Electric Daisy Carnival, National Finals Rodeo, maybe even CES, is it actually has a common pop culture appeal where people get it, you know, and there are other ways to be part of it outside of the event proper, right? There are satellite events and, you
That's
know,
fair.
Viewing parties, and it has this, you know, sort of like general cultural cachet. So I feel like people can participate in it more, and that gives me the feeling that it will be, you know, sort of like more, you know, sort of economically, you know, spread out. I mean, the big thing about F1 is it scared a lot of people off, right? Who said, oh my God, this thing's like, sounds like such, you know, an intensive nightmare that I'm just going to avoid Vegas for a minute.
It took
and
over.
Let them do their thing. Right, right. And so I think there's something more invitational, you know, about the Super Bowl that I'm not as, you know, concerned about the impact on the everyday people like us.
There is something to be said for just like being in the city where it's happening, even if you might be going to like a local sports bar or something else on the strip rather than the game itself. What do you think, Figler?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want to be a naysayer about these big events coming to Las Vegas. There is good economic impact. It does create jobs. I don't think anyone is saying that. It's just the question is it fair? Is it holistically thought about? Is it planned in a thoughtful way? The answer, of course, always is not really, sort of. We're not good at that. But, I mean, when you talk about Super Bowl, Super Bowl is always a big weekend in Las Vegas. I mean, it's going to be even bigger now it's here. But yeah, people have been coming to Las Vegas during Super Bowl weekend for decades because of just, I mean, just like March Madness, just like other sporting events that, you know, already was a draw. So I think in a lot of ways, Las Vegas is sort of used to an influx. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a lot different because the party is actually here.
Right.
You know, you look outside the window and you see what you see on your TV, you know, and it's another opportunity for Vegas to promote itself for free to the world like it did with F1. I mean, that also is kind of an interesting metric just about the exposure of how fun our city still is and is continuing to be, right? And that's going to have a good impact. But yeah, you know, there will also be losers over the Super Bowl weekend. And do we ever really think about those type of economic impacts? And maybe Vegas should be better at that by now.
All right. Well, speaking of commercialization of the Strip, I noticed last night that the side of the Luxor was now just an advertisement for Michelob Light. But that's not the craziest advertisement that's been up there recently. So, David, can you tell us more?
Yeah, it was a giant Dorito chip. Mm-hmm. Very lifelike, too, to the extent that, yeah, if Godzilla was around, he would have taken a bite. I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, there was a blog entry not long ago pointing that out on a sort of a sports bro site that was really interesting. And it sort of pontificated that the Sphere has changed the game for Las Vegas in the world of marketing, viral marketing, digital marketing, that, you know, everyone is so fascinated internationally with the Sphere. And the Sphere's game plan is not to, I think, make their money off of U2 concerts and really expensive movies, but the advertising on the outside. And it is capable of some real bombastic stuff, as we all now realize. You know, it's really super cool. So, you know, the idea was like, well, the Sphere has definitely made this huge splash. So what's everyone else going to do? And now we're seeing a greater commercialization of the iconic properties on the Strip. You know, the idea of wrapping a building is not new to Las Vegas. We have been seeing this for a very long time. Any longtime Las Vegan can close their eyes and see the beaming faces of Donnie and Marie on the side of the Flamingo Hotel.
Oh, those teeth.
Those teeth. Those just pure.
They haunt my dreams.
Yeah. And, you know, when there's sporting events or other, you know, Cirque du Soleil has been doing that on the buildings for a while. But now it's getting, like, way more commercial. And some people are wondering about, you know, is this a good trend? The Delano has a giant Pepsi display on it right now as well. We're going to see a lot of this engaged with Super Bowl. In fact, I think the Delano's Pepsi one is specifically and explicitly a Super Bowl type ad. And that's kind of where we are right now. I think every building that has that technology is possibly going to use it now.
You know, I hadn't really thought it. This is silly of me, but I hadn't thought about this as like a lead up to Super Bowl advertising. But the one that caught my eye a while ago is that people were upset that the Paris's L'Arc de Triomphe was covered up with banners for Martha Stewart and Vanderpump Rules. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, this is a kind of a beautiful thing. We don't want it covered. Andrew, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that Figler pointed out something interesting. And what's different now, it seems to me, is that the sort of old school raps, the Osmonds and Cirque, like at least those advertised something that was happening inside the property.
Inside,
and
like
that kind
Martha
of goes
Stewart,
in the vein of the right. Yeah, Vanderpump. And that kind of, you know, rhymes with, you know, Learning from Las Vegas, you know, the seminal 1972 book that talked about the whole idea of the decorated shed. And I would advertise the contents within. But now it's very detached and it says nothing about, you know, sense of place or, you know, the sort of the entertainment value offerings of the property. It's just like Doritos, Michelob.
There's no Doritos inside.
You know, and so there's something weirdly detached.
Andrew Crawley going deep. I love this.
I know.
Always.
I did my homework. But yeah, there's something weird and sad and dystopian about the whole thing to see a gigantic Dorito driving down the Strip. And
there is.
The Luxor was always one of my favorite buildings in town for its defiant, insistent blackness, you know? So,
yeah.
It's kind of sad.
It was beautiful when it first came out.
I mean, they have had ads on there before. I mean, they're not, this isn't a new thing for them, but this is pretty, I mean, covering the whole building like a Dorito, that was.
And I hate those smaller apps, like the Michelob Light one, like it just really does take something away from the architecture. I think that the bigger debate, like speaking of learning from Las Vegas, which, you know, put Las Vegas on the map as sort of an architectural center, is our architecture really so valuable that it matters if it's covered up in ads? What do we think?
Oh, yeah, that's a really interesting question. How valuable is the 2024 style of, you know, architecture on Las Vegas Boulevard? I don't know. You know, this is just, to me, as much as I prefer the old school buildings of the 50s, 60s, 70s, before we turned into Mega Resort Place, there's still something special and unique about all of those buildings, or let me just say most of those buildings. And it does come off as crass commercialization. And I know that there's a lot of people saying, it's Las Vegas, but, you know, still it's our town. And it's like, it reminds me of that trend that was going on when people could, like, shell out their own cars with full car wraps for whatever, and they would get paid a small stipend to advertise butt cream or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing.
Where's your self-respect, man? For a couple of dollars?
Where's your dignity?
You know?
We get more visitors than, or as many as, like, Paris and Venice. So, like, I do feel like that says something about maintaining the beauty of these structures, which are more complicated than the learning from Las Vegas days, which were literally, like, you know, a big brick building with amazing neon on the front. But, like, the architecture itself wasn't anything. Andrew, what are you thinking?
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of, like, tracking with David. And like, part of me wants to, you know, sort of go on some kind of smart Dave Hickey jag and say, like, yeah, this kind of, you know, merging between architecture and advertising is like an apotheosis or distillation of, you know, spectacle and you know, visual culture and capitalism in Las Vegas and America. But then I look at it and I'm just like, no. And I never thought I'd be the kind of person to say, yeah, maybe like Vegas should operate at some minimum level of dignity. But, you know, here we are. So, yeah.
God.
I say we should, you know, we got to aspire to some kind of standard. So, yeah, it's a bit, disheartening to see. And in some ways it kind of, you know, presages, you know, some kind of like dystopian cyberpunk, you know, environment to me where, you know, like and one feature of that, you know, ethos is like advertising that you cannot escape. Right. And that's the interesting thing about big advertising that, you know, that it takes over the public space in a way where it feels invasive, you know, and gross, right?
Okay, so question, you know, is there a building in your hearts and minds that if it got totally wrapped, Cristo the Wrap Building style?
Yeah.
in advertising, you would be really upset about that. Andrew, go.
I would say, like, you know, Hoover Dam, you know, might be off limits to me, though. Though the sight of a giant Dorito, you know, holding in all that water is actually kind of an interesting spectacle.
Yes.
Now that I think about it, you know,
it could be like a sponge.
You know, maybe, like Mr. Clean, the melamine sponges or whatever. You know, Smith Center, you know, cool building. You know, some of those cool ones I think should be, but the Luxor itself.
Yeah.
I just want to ask, you know, just go back to black, right? And Christopher Hawthorne, the architecture critic, wrote, I had him write an article for Desert Companion back in the day about his favorite building in Vegas. And he chose the Luxor. And that's kind of what made me fall in love with the Luxor, because he so cogently argued for its strange purity. And maybe that's something a thread that we could hold on to.
David, what do you think? What building or monument would break your heart to be a Dorito?
You know, what's in my mind are the steady complaints that come whenever they put like sports jerseys on the statues over at Caesar's Palace or on the Statue of Liberty replica over at New York. But I think that the Strip is not off bounds because of what it is. What Strip City presents itself as is this sort of, you know, heart of American dark commercial exploitation. And so all bets off, literally, you could pretty much do anything on the Strip except one building on the Strip. I would be disheartened to see a wrap for some product on the Guardian Angel Cathedral that is right there behind the Encore and the Wynn. I think
really
that would
be
bad. Although I will say this. If you've ever had the pleasure of going to that structure, which is just phenomenal, historic, important institution in Las Vegas, in the stained glass itself, there are images of the casinos of the day, which I think is just so fantastic for a Catholic church. Yeah. But that's as far as I'll go with that.
If it was wrapped, would it be sacrilegious or sacrilicious? No.
Okay. Sorry. I'm done. Oh, I'm out on that. I love you, Andrew Crawley, but you just crossed the line.
You're logging off?
Logging off.
Well, our producer loved it, so it is absolutely staying in. All right, so we are very casino-focused today because our last story is about what is going to replace the Fiesta Henderson. I'm sure that you two remember Fiesta Henderson as a very uncomfortably racist, like, African-themed casino when it first opened. And then it sort of went to this, like, Fiesta, you know, carnival theme. It closed in March of 2020 during the pandemic and did not reopen. I have to say, though, it tore my heart apart to see that sign come down, because when I moved to Vegas, I arrived at night, and it was, like, the first thing I saw as I was coming into my new neighborhood. And I do think it was an incredible piece of art. And the Neon tried to get it, they told me, and there was just, like, no contact. They just wanted to sell it for parts. So, like, I do really miss that as a piece of art in this neighborhood, genuinely. But there is, now the whole casino is gone except for the parking garage. There's a lot of debate about what should be there. Actually, you know, not necessarily a lot of debate. The community says that they would like it to be a tournament-style sports center and a focus on family entertainment within that 35-acre complex. I would love to see a gym, which is very simple, but, like, that's a facility we don't have out here in Hendertucky, so it'd be nice to have something close. So, question, like, how often in both of yours experience are demolished casinos replaced with another casino, or does something else usually go up in its space?
Well, this is an interesting one because it's the city of Henderson that actually has a call out, you know, for a private-public partnership, I guess, of some sort, to try to develop something.
They bought the space, so it's really theirs. And Henderson, honestly, does seem to be really good about engaging the public when it's making big moves like this.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, it gets disheartening. On the Strip, of course, when a casino goes down, typically it is replaced with a bigger casino. Out in the community, we saw this with the Texas Station. That wasn't the case. So, you know, do we need to replace casinos with casinos? That's really super interesting question. What do you think?
Yeah, if the other casino didn't do well there, should another one go in?
You see how I ducked that? I ducked that.
Andrew, companion.
Well, you know, one question I had, and this may reflect how out of touch I am with Henderson, but is Henderson ready for, you know, a legitimate performing arts center? And, you know, could it live there?
Oh, that's interesting.
That's sort of a serious, unserious answer. But, you know, people are talking about a sports, you know, watching kind of place. But Henderson does a lot of cultural programming, you know, because we hit a lot of it on the website. And I'm like, yeah, what if there's a centralized source for that worked in tandem with, you know, Water Street Plaza, an amphitheater, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So that's one of my serious proposals.
I hope that is part of the idea of a family-focused entertainment area. Mm-hmm. I feel like if we got something major, though, we'd be getting a lot of shit from the rest of Henderson over here at the end where the highways conclude, which, of course, is unfair in a way. But it would be, you know, people would see it as not being centralized, perhaps.
Right.
But I think it would be really great for the community, the big population here. So that's the serious answer, perhaps. What are your unserious answers? What should replace the Fiesta Henderson?
I propose that it is a burial ground for all the unfortunate nicknames that have beleaguered Henderson over the years.
Thank you.
Hendertucky, Hendoville, Metherson. Yeah. I made that one up, but it sounds like, Hendonia, maybe. That's one of my proposals. And then, how about you, David?
I think that there should be a structure built with discarded stations players cards, all the little plastic cards that just wind up in the landfill. There are probably millions of them, and I would love to see them constructed in a way that is sort of a pay on to all the wagers made and lost in stations, casinos by locals over the years. But it would have to be made of the players' cards themselves. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get more insane.
More insane. What? I have a building built of players' cards. Come on.
Here's one on the sort of burial theme. I have aren't enough bad things buried in Henderson already? That's a contaminated soil joke.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
All right. You asked for dark.
Well, on that side, if we're going to go with the Henderson theme, I think there should be a virtual PepCon experience where people can walk in to the building and experience the horror and terror of the rocket fuel building that blew up some 20 plus years ago, 30.
Do you remember where you were, David?
I was in college watching it on TV.
I felt the blast. I was in the third floor of Main Hall at Las Vegas High School, now Las Vegas Academy, in Mr. Carlin's calculus class, and the windows shuddered.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it. And
there was a lot of accounts. And it took with it a marshmallow factory, the Kid Marshmallow Factory.
Yeah, the Kid Marshmallow Factory, the real tragedy of the day.
Yeah, well, and thankfully, Ethel M. Chocolate Factory, which is just down the way, wasn't impacted. Otherwise, there'd be s'mores for decades in the air.
I love it.
I'm still stuck on celebrating all the disasters in Henderson over the years. have a Three Kids Mine exhibit there too. Oh my God, Henderson, you're very good at burying your past, and I think it needs to be maybe a little more exposed
on
this
public
space.
We're an industrial community.
Hey, yeah. Random question: is there actually a museum that commemorates, explores, notes Henderson's role in World War II and all the industrial, heavy lifting that it did? Because I mean,
don't even understand why the streets in this neighborhood are called things like Magnesium, right? And Victory.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I mean, maybe that,
Henderson Museum. That's not unserious. That is serious, everybody. We
Super
deserve
serious.
It. And there's interesting shit. I shouldn't swear quite so much.
You can.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you for coming out on this cold day. And I'm sure I'll see you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks again. Always fun being here.
Always. I love Fridays. Fridays. Fridays.
Fridays, baby. Fridays. If you love CityCast Daily Newsletter and you want to work with this amazing team, you should apply for the newsletter editor job. Head over to citycast.fm/jobs. The deadline is this Sunday, January 14th, and then we'll be reviewing applications. That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our executive producer is Sonia Cho Swanson. Our producer is Layla Mohammed. Our newsletter editor is Scott Dickensheets, but not for long. Applications open until January 14th. And your hosts are David Figler and me, Sarah Lohman. Music is by OG Moose, Epidemic Sound, and all the kimonos. We record this show on the traditional homelands of the Nuwuvi, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, subscribe to our morning newsletter. You won't regret a single choice there. We'll be back Tuesday with more news from around the city. Take care.
If you love the CityCast newsletter so much, why don't you make it yourself?
Now we're talking.
Apply now.